You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Matt Katz, in for Tanzina. Almost exactly 1 year ago, several weeks into nationwide lockdowns, I was in the guest host chair for The Takeaway. And during that time of panic and uncertainty, we checked in with several comedians to see how they were adapting to life without live stand-up shows, and to find out where they were finding space for humor amid all of the grim news. 1 year later, we wanted to check back in with one of those guests.
Hello. I'm Roy Wood Jr., a correspondent with The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
During the pandemic, Roy has been churning out segments for The Daily Show from home. Here he is talking with Trevor Noah right after the November election about whether he'll ever trust pollsters again.
I will try to predict elections again, only now I will be using more reliable predictions, like astrology, or the reading the entrails of a guinea pig, or like on the night of a full moon, going outside, urinating, seeing if my pee make any type of words or letters I can read, you know, some of that Ouija board.
Well, I mean, another option is you could always just try and talk to people of different communities and try and suss out their perspective of the world.
Yeah, I said talk to astrologists. That's what I said. You're not listening.
Now, while it's been a full year since he performed for an in-person audience, Roy is planning to do stand-up once again as early as this summer. But the excitement of getting back on the road is also bringing him some mixed emotions.
Comedy is an addiction, period, point blank. It is an addiction to adrenaline. And my buddy Neil Brennan said this, and I've never agreed with it more. There's got to be something wrong with your brain to walk into a room full of strangers and basically walk on stage and go, everybody be quiet. I've got something important to say. You know, I love it. You know, it's the rawest form of expression. But what makes me nervous about getting back out there is, number one, you have all these thoughts and opinions and jokes and perspectives that you want to delve into. But comedians don't have the luck. We're the one entertainment discipline that's created in front of the consumer. So you see our failures, you know? So when you have a joke that's kind of juggling dynamite in terms of the type of topics that you want to discuss, those failures in public now come at a potential penalty. And that was already in place before COVID.
Sure.
So now add on top of that an audience at 50% well, not in Texas, if you're packing them in, but coupled with that, audiences a little more spread out, people a little more paranoid, a cough in a room being the same as a gunshot. I'm very curious to see what people are thinking and feeling. And you know, my approach to this is the same as when you go into the ocean. You dip your toes in, so that's a few rooftop shows and outdoor shows in the city just to get the muscle of performing back. And then maybe you do one or two, you know, shows in the tri-state somewhere. And, you know, hopefully by, I don't know, summer or fall, depending on how this vaccine moves nationally. That's another thing I'm monitoring is the rollout. Then you start trying to get on the road a little bit, you know, and figure out air travel. Am I going to take the train everywhere? Like, am I only going to perform in train cities? Well, what are the logistics of just sitting on an Amtrak in a sleeper car every day, you know? So sure. I don't know, but you know, how to do it is as important as just going out and doing it. And at some point I've got to get back out there because that's still the essence of who I am, because stand-up is the one thing they cannot take from me. I can't get notes on it. You can't tell me it's over. All the comedians that are respected died with dates on the books. That's where you can't stop. It is an addiction.
Is part of the draw that brings you back every night to go back on stage the hearing the laughter? Because that's something you literally haven't heard live in a year. I mean, even The Daily Show, there's no making jokes, telling funny stories, doing amazing bits, and there's no studio audience. So is that something you really miss, just hearing like a room of strangers laughing?
I miss people. I really do. And I've done Zoom shows and the online shows, and those are cool, but it's not the same. It's just not the same as, you know, seeing and connecting with people. And at the end of the day, we're just all out here trying to make sure that we're not alone and feeling the way we feel. That's why we consume most media, because it touches us in some way. So whether it's music or comedy or a concert or a film or whatever, I just think we're looking to satiate, you know, a need to feel. We all have a need to feel something. And, you know, comedy does that for me. And to do it one way for 23 years and then in the 24th year, yeah, there's not going to be any people. And it's like, nah, I got to get back out there at some point.
When you get back out there, are you going to miss Donald Trump at all? I mean, the political landscape is different now. No more Trump jokes, or I guess you could still talk about Trump, but the relevancy is gone. You had said, I read in Vulture, that you think Trump was good for comedy. Why, and what happens now?
I felt that Trump was good for comedy in the sense of pushing comedians to deeper places to talk about. Like, most of the Trump jokes are obvious, or were obvious. So I felt like that put us in a place of a creative boom. So of course there's more things to laugh about because we're all connected and we're all looking at this crazy thing. Trump is literally like a second sun coming up over the horizon. You cannot ignore that. We must have discussions about that. But for the people who choose not to, you had to immediately come up with more things, and you had to be more in depth in terms of your content and what you were discussing. Because the Trump jokes, you know, a lot of that, it's surface. And it's also something that everyone has an opinion on. And I think it became more and more difficult with Trump to have a unique take on him that was long lasting, that could outlive his news cycle. So yeah. I felt like it's good in the sense that as a comic, you now have to figure out something. The only analogy I can make is that, you know, in late night television, and this is including our program as well, it's day to day. We're following what happened today or in the last 48 hours. And, you know, a lot of those jokes are about the weather. Whereas to me, good stand up is about the climate. And with Trump, it was difficult to find jokes about the climate because you were still in the middle of the hurricane. But the comics who could, I think you get rewarded.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that's more touching. That's also why I love being a correspondent, because Trevor can carry the weather just fine. And he can give you new prisms through which to look at these things that are currently happening and give you the prognostication of the future. Whereas a correspondent, I get to go out and talk to the people who are ultimately affected by a lot of these policies that are discussed in the weather.
Interesting. So one part of the climate, particularly right now and always in America, racial justice and the uprisings that we saw last year, you were back home in Alabama during that, involved in attending some protests. What was that experience like? Did you take some time away from, you know, finding whatever the satire that could be gleaned from it and just give a moment to think about the gravity of where we were and where we are in America right now?
Well, that's what I went and I expected. But for me, the thing that really struck me was, and I can only speak, you know, to Birmingham, but what really struck me was how many people still care about one another, you know, across races. You know, the richest zip code, Mountain Brook, Alabama, which is the richest zip code in the state of Alabama. It's our Beverly Hills, if you will. You know, those people showed up on some George Floyd protesting, you know, taking knees with black people. And that's not something that would have happened in a place like Birmingham, hell, 4 years ago, let alone, you know, 2019. So, you know, there were a lot of moments, you know, there were a lot of people that came in with the riffraff and vandalized a lot of buildings downtown. You know, Birmingham was no different than most cities when, you know, things got unruly at night. But the next day, it was white people and black people coming together to clean up those respective businesses. It wasn't just black people. And so, you know, you're out there because you're angry, but then you cannot deny the facts when you see that people actually care about one another. It's like, wow. And it left me with a sense of hope for what could be, you know, because hopelessness is the default, you know, more often than not, especially if you're black, man. It's you got to dig deep to find that hope every day. So it was really cool to just see it in action, you know, while I was down there.
Also down in Alabama, you were raising money early in the quarantine for Stardome Comedy Club, and you were doing these Instagram fundraisers. What happened to Stardome? How's the club doing?
The club is still there. They were able to weather the storm. You know, I can't speak to whether or not they took a PPE loan or not, but I know that they got crafty, and this sounds odd to say, but I think part of what helped the Stardome is that they were in Alabama, and a lot of the shutdown orders came down much later in that state.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's also part of why a lot of states in the South are the ones that are coming back and, you know, we're open again. Well, you weren't closed as long as everybody else, so you still have a decent entertainment infrastructure there. Hmm. You know, so you know, couple that with a couple of, you know, the PP loans like that, I think really helped them. But there's been a lot of good comedy clubs that bit the dust nationally. And, you know, with what Mike Birbiglia and I were doing at the time with the whole tip your waitstaff thing, we were just trying to raise money for the waitresses who got laid off. We never thought the club would close. Even within COVID in those early days, in that April window.
Right.
Oh, the club is closed for the summer and the staff is laid off. Oh, get the staff a couple bucks till the club opens back up in July, in August. Even within COVID, like as a rainstorm was coming in, we still didn't know that it was a Cat 5 hurricane, but a Cat 8 hurricane coming behind that. You know, it just, we did everything we could for, you know, a number of clubs. I think it was close to a quarter mil. I know we touched 200.
That's great.
I know we touched 200K totally for, you know, for all the comedy clubs and the wait staffs that we were trying to get money for. But
I mean, the comedy scene's going to look a lot different, right? I mean, once this is all said and done, I mean, if all these clubs are closed.
For as long as you have people who want to perform and people who want to listen to performers, the rest of it will figure itself out. I think in the smaller, you know, B and C markets where clubs have closed, you're going to see a different type of venue for comedy. I think that'll be the main thing, is that I think the places where comedy occurs might be a little different. You know, New York's and Nashville's and all, you know, those places are going to be fine. But, you know, when I think about a club like the Comedy Showcase in Lansing, Michigan, that one's on the bubble. That one's on the bubble. Yeah. Jukebox Comedy Club in Peoria. That thing is an institution going back to the early 90s. Like Sam Kinison touched that same stage. Richard Pryor from Peoria touched that stage. So it's those spots. And from those places, that's where your next performers are coming. That's where they learned. So, you know, comedy might have to move back to the bars. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a speakeasy situation, because I think comedy is going to be in the same bucket as music, where until the larger venues open to do something, the bars that are just now coming back online are going to need a reason to get people in there. Mm-hmm. And the comedians need to go to a place where there's going to be people. So that might be your happy marriage. So I think we might be more dependent upon, you know, some hybrid use facilities going forward. But, you know, it's hard to say. And, you know, it's definitely tougher to say now than it was in, you know, March or April when the entire country shut down, where now, you know, you have clubs pretty much, I call it the SEC and the Big 12, like clubs down in that region, you know, the lower half of, you know, the 48, they're going to be doing better than clubs, you know, in other parts of the country. But some of those clubs are connected to chains, so maybe they can move money around, you know, in a sexy way that helps, you know, keep things in motion.
To step away from the clubs into the studio for a moment, you've got a new podcast coming out next week. Some people baked sourdough during the pandemic. Everyone else got a podcast, it seems. Tell us about the new show. What's it about?
Roy's Job Fair is essentially the idea came when the unemployment number hit, I think it was 30 million. at one point in this country. It was like 30 million Americans that were out of work. I was trying to figure out a way to have a conversation every week with real people just about their work. And so what it kind of turned into, you know, originally it was just, all right, we're just going to talk job openings and give people ideas of where to pivot. And that's part of the show. But ultimately, it's just sharing conversations with people who either love their boss, hate their boss, you're looking for a boss, or you're trying to be your own boss. Pretty much all of us fall into one of those four quadrants.
Right.
I mean, honestly, and I hate to say it like this, but it's true. Work is like sex. Like, you're either getting enough or you need to get a little more. And if you're not getting any, you're looking for it. And so, you know, this podcast, you know, I think the desire to provide and to also seek fulfillment through how you provide for yourself and for your family, I think it's something that connects us. And if it connects us, there's going to be jokes. So we're just having funny, real conversations with people. I'm literally just talking to random strangers, myself and my co-host. You know, if you hate your job, this is a place to come. Let's talk about it. You know, if you love your job, we'll hear that too. Yeah, and hopefully somewhere in there, people get ideas about where to work and what they want to do by talking to people, not just like small business owners who are hiring, but, you know, we got people from major Fortune 500 companies that are calling in as well and just discussing career opportunities.
Wow. So blue-collar jobs, white-collar jobs, everything in between you'll touch on.
Literally everything. Like, I'm like, there's a strip club in Tampa that's hiring, but there's also a rideshare company that's hiring for coders. Put them in the same episode.
Yeah.
Why not? Let's explore that world and just find out more about people and what they do for a living and what drives them. You know, this isn't like employment listings, the podcast. Like, this is just a conversation about jobs. It connects us the same as food, the same as relationships.
Roy Wood Jr. is a comedian and correspondent for The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. And his new podcast is Roy's Job Fair. Get it wherever you get your pods. Roy, thank you so much for coming back on. Hopefully we are not speaking again a year from now because we're still in a pandemic.
Well, if we are, I'll have another podcast and I'll talk about that.
Great. Looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you.